Now he wants to give us some specific instances of God's sovereign hand over evil.
Scripture,
right? He says, is not content to express God's sovereignty over evil in kind of broad generalities, but indicates specific instances of his sovereignty over evil. And of course, you know, the big one that we all think of right. is Job's suffering,
right?
He's probably the most well-known example.
Yeah, because we can look at Job and say, oh, well, at least my life's not that bad. That's how we feel better.
Yeah.
But that's not what Job says. Job acknowledges the sovereignty of God in giving him all that he has and then summarily taking it away. Naked I came out of my mother's womb and naked shall I return. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And he tells this to his wife. Wife, after this calamity had occurred, children killed, his livestock stolen.
All of his worldly possessions basically are gone.
Yeah, and I believe kind of the take on Job is that he's kind of this a regional king. That's why he has so much stuff. So he's pockmarked and in the ash field. He's scraping himself with a pottery shard. And then his friends come out, and it gets even worse. So even within this, he is still saying, look, the Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. So not even Job, even though he recognizes the sovereignty of God in this and allowing it to happen, he still is saying that God's name is still be able to be blessed. And he's not saying, well, God did this evil to me, and he's culpable. He's morally culpable. He does not charge the Almighty with wrongdoing in verse 22, in chapter 1, but blesses his name in an act of simple worship.
Right. So one would say, oh, Job, all this is evil has happened, and you're saying that it's from the Lord? Yes. Right. And the scripture says that, in doing this, Job has not charged the Almighty with wrongdoing. Mm-hmm. That's what verse 23 says, right?
And he didn't even have the Bible.
Yeah. And so Christensen tells us that here we're, this is where many are befuddled, right? How does God respond, right? Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Job doesn't charge God with evil. So how does God respond? Is he dismayed by the tragedy of deaths of Job's sons and daughters and that sort of thing? Does he think that these things are out of hand? Has Satan gone too far, right? should he have put a tighter leash on him kind of thing, right? If any of this is true, if that's true, then why does God instigate a second wave of calamity? Right.
Right. Right. That's the boils and the friends come out. So note how God frames the second challenge to Satan. Job still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him, destroy him without reason. That's chapter 2, verse 3. God puts forth the challenge, yet it is Satan who incites God against the innocent man. God accepts broad responsibility for Job's calamity, but definitely distances himself from moral liability. He says, I will allow this to happen. And, Satan is in God's presence and he's asking for permission. And I've always attributed more to my reading of A.W. Pink than to Luther. But the quote is that even Satan is God's Satan. He's a creature. He's not in an arm wrestling match with God, but he's a creature made in God's power that. Fell and has a specific purpose that God uses him for, and this is one of those purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is left to chance. God knows full well that Job will retain his moral integrity and refuse to curse him in face of murder and mayhem. I mean, that's what God's bet here is with Satan. He's not saying like, I think this might be the
case. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not rolling the dice on Job. Yeah.
And it's in fear and eating us.
Yeah. Well, and two, say that's the case. Well, what are the stakes? The stakes are Satan's saying, listen, this is you bless him. Of course, he's going to declare you good and holy and righteous. Let calamity come to him, let evil come to him, and he'll curse your name at the first thing. It's God's character, his nature that Satan is impugning here. He's he's attacking. That's the end goal. Is if you're so good, let you be good even the evil. And here's a perfect example: someone who has it all, take it all away, right. and your your creature who knows you the best, that is offering sacrifices for his children in case they do anything evil or wrong, but they're still having family meals together, then your character will be impugned by him. Well, that's the attack that even Satan in that passage is acknowledging the stake. The stake is God's character and nature comporting with both good and
right. evil. It's kind of like, he says, the only reason why you do good to him is because, he does this stuff for you, right? But if he didn't do this stuff for you, then you wouldn't do good to him. So it is a challenge to God's nature, right? And God is going to say, well, what we see in the account is God does good and evil, and it doesn't matter. He's still God. And Job obviously, goes through this particular ordeal.
Right. So this isn't a roll of the dice. Nothing is left to chance. God knows full well that Job will retain his moral integrity and refuse to curse him in face of murder and mayhem. The fact that he declares the end from the beginning helps that out as well. because he has predetermined the outcome, Job passes the test, but his wife does not. She says, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." Thanks, hon. Appreciate that. Notice she doesn't say curse Satan and die.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really interesting. Christensen tells us that humans intuitively turn to God when calamity strikes.
Right? There are no atheists in foxholes.
That's right, because they understand that in their heart of hearts that God controls the events of history. Job remains unmoved by the seething anger, building up in his wife's heart. "You speak as one of the foolish women," he tells her, right? "Shall we receive notice good from God, and shall we not receive evil?" Right. That's what he tells her, right?
In light of everything that's known from the fall onward.
Yeah, yeah. And so once again, Christensen tells us that we might expect many readers to think that Job has uttered something impertinent, right? That somehow Job has blasphemed, receiving evil from God, right?
Oh, no. Yet he's failed already.
The inspired author tells us this: "In all this, Job did not sin with his lips." There it is, right? In other words, he believes that God to be responsible for the evil that transpires, but not morally culpable or blamable for the evil, right?
So even Job's brothers and sisters understand this robust theology of providence. The inspired writer records their faithful theodical thoughts. "They showed him sympathy and comforted him from all the evil the Lord had brought upon him," in verse 11. And all that unfolds in the book of Job, Satan is never mentioned on the lips of the human participants. Yahweh alone is regarded as the author of Job's calamity, yet he remains free of moral culpability.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where we'll stop. And so, from this Job passage, we're kind of seeing where Christians are going to go by saying God is transcendent. His ways are not our ways. We can't think like God because only God is God. And so we have to face the testimony of Scripture and see what it says of what God reveals. And part of it is that God is both responsible for the evil that occurs, but he doesn't get down in the dirt dirty.
He's not morally culpable for it.
Right.
He allows it. He accounts for it. He, decrees it. But that doesn't mean that he is blamable for the evil. Uh-huh. Each person does that. In fact, in this instance, Satan does that, on his own.
Right.
Right.
And so this is kind of like the Dawn soap of, you put it on your hand and you try and put the grease on it or the dirt and it slips off. It's just not able to stick to the surface because of the nature of the soap. Yeah. The nature of God does not allow him to be morally culpable to this. And so that might not be satisfying to you in this chapter, but chapter 9 will deal a lot more with that. So if you're like, I'm just not satisfied with this explanation, what Christensen's doing is he's offering the biblical testimony to say, what does the Bible say about evil and God in relationship? Well, it seems to say he brings it forth, but he's also not morally culpable. And so we'll look at a few more examples and things like divine hardening and so on and so forth in the next episode as we finish up chapter 8, walking through the Bible's dark forest.